I almost said good morning, but it's been a very, very long morning, and we're well into the afternoon. We are charged with providing you with some concluding remarks. Well, those who don't know, I'm David Held from the LSE, and I have the privilege of running the KFAS LSE Kuwait program there. I want to begin by thanking our hosts, KFAS, for the provision of a world-class infrastructure and superb guidance in the delivery of the conference. It couldn't have gone more smoothly. I also want to thank the LSE team that has worked so hard to plan and deliver this conference. Christian, wherever you are, Ian up there, oh, they're all together, and Dominica at the back row. Thank you enormously for a conference that has, I think, been a major achievement. I should also, of course, thank the speakers and the audience for some remarkable questions. I think this has been a very successful and intellectually very productive conference, and I've rarely been to a two-day conference that's achieved such a sustained level of discussion. My only regret is, and I do have one regret, is that we'll all have to follow with a diet because of the extraordinary quality and quantity of the food we have all enjoyed. I want to conclude this conference, for my part, by organizing my remarks briefly on three subjects, all of which have emerged. One, global transformations that affect this region, that affect us, Kuwaiti and Gulfi transformations, and some thought about the LSE-KFAS joint program. So let me start with some macro trends, very briefly, that have emerged. A significant recurring theme has, of course, been the economic rise of Asia, reflected in the pattern of trade in the Gulf. The world is shifting from 300 years of unquestioned Western dominance to a more complex and fluid power structure. The global financial crisis has accelerated this development, favoring the surplus economies decisively over the debtor economies. This has led to a new world of increasing multipolarity. I'm reminded briefly, I'll be very brief, of Joe Nye from the Kennedy School at Harvard, Joe Nye's conception of a global order as a three-dimensional chess set. You have violence and security at the top, economic power second, and soft power, cultural power third. In the age of empire, empires dominated from the top down. Increasingly today, whilst we can say that the US remains the dominant military power, at the level of economics, it's a multipolar order. And at the level of culture and civil society, it's a diverse world of many voices. And these levels now interact in extraordinary ways, such that the biggest military power in the world could not win the peace in a country of a relatively small population like Iraq. All this has put pressure on the 1945 multilateral order, established in different times for different purposes. The rise of new emergent voices, the very result of the success of economic globalization and the multilateral order, has put strains on the capacity and the representativeness of the UN system itself. The result is the gridlock we now live with on financial market reform, trade reform, the Doha Round, nuclear proliferation, climate change, among other critical issues. And the multilateral order faces a number of trajectories: reform to include the new voices, effective irrelevance as the world becomes increasingly divided into regions and competing power blocks, or descent into a new world of uncertainty, resource wars, where oil, gas, water, food, secure habitats are all at issue. Only the Owl of Minerva knows which of these trajectories will prevail, though we can, of course, do much to clarify the choices and aid the wisdom of the choices made. Now let me turn from this set of themes to the Kuwait and the Gulf transformations that have emerged in this discussion. Here there are clear shifts in economic patterns, eastward shifts of economic activity. Yet, as someone noted, the Asianization of the elements of the economy, despite the Asianization of elements of the economy, as it were, there's a westernization of learning models. The expansion of higher education, marked by the presence, which we've just discussed, of many US and European universities, generates an increasingly competitive university system, which nonetheless faces some serious cultural challenges and questions of economic relevance. Yet, one thing that this all produces, that more learning produces at all levels, it produces raised expectations among those who learn. And raised expectations conjoin now with a world of increasing uncertainty. It is against this background that, of course, we can understand the Arab Spring or the Arab 1989. Major new questions about the nature and form of rulership have been forcefully put on the table, and they are not going to go away. Two questions arise. Will traditional principles of rulership and legitimacy survive, or will they gradually give way to new democratic principles? If so, of what type? There are many models of democracy, and the Western cherished model of competitive party systems is not the only model on the table. And secondly, will existing governance institutions be effective enough to meet some of the new current challenges? And here there is a complex, almost vicious circle. Oil-based rent states distribute wealth. The stakeholders of the regime include most of the citizens. An extreme form of welfare dependency prevails, among other things. To change the political system is not enough, because the political system is deeply linked into a system of distribution and a culture that goes to the very heart of the system itself. This is a very complex constellation of politics, economics, and cultural expectation. These issues also tie up with the question of the development of a knowledge-based economy if it is to remain a priority. The knowledge economy rests now in enclaves, as we've heard, and these need to be broadened out if the priorities are to be met. The scale and investment in the knowledge economy has risen steeply, but shifts in learning and culture are critical to its future development. Urgent changes are needed, a domestic institutional infrastructure for enhancing the knowledge economy, institutions and regulatory reforms, e.g. unblocking the licensing systems, moving from investment in buildings and physical capital to investment in human capital with new incentives for innovation and invention, and shifting from vertical to horizontal authority structures, as many of the largest corporations have already done, from a distributive state to flatter organizational forms with incentivized, knowledgeable agents at its heart. And this needs to be linked, as others have pointed out, perhaps to a more autonomous civil society or more free deliberative agents across the public and the private sector. A big agenda indeed. This brings me to my third and final point, where the LSE KFAS program can help and deepen its work. It can help, I think, and deepen its work by continuing its fundamental research on key issues, from energy and the economy to sustainability and political reform. It can deepen its partnership with the Gulf universities on key research projects, as we are doing. It can enhance local capacities linked to world-class research ideas. And perhaps it can do one other thing, which is develop a new series of policy briefs on many of the issues we have discussed. And these include policy-oriented research on the bottlenecks in key developmental areas, welfare reform from welfare entitlement to welfare as an earned privilege, shifting cultures of extreme welfare dependency through education, shifting incentive structures so economic incentives are provided for moving away from simply state-based activity, examining conditions for private sector growth and entrepreneurial behavior, examining how to break the gridlock in local and indeed global political systems, easing the passage of key political and legislative decisions. We have done much work, but as always, there is more to do. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. After such an elegant summary that David has done, it's hard for me to say much, but I will try to summarize some of the points that were raised by in the opening ceremony and during our discussion. I'd like just to highlight it for your attention. Dr. Adnan Shahabuddin, when he opened the session yesterday in his opening remark, he highlighted the importance of this conference, particularly at this juncture of the world economy, what we are going through. He also noted and emphasized the importance of the LSE Kuwait program in sort of narrowing the gap between knowledge between the West and the East. And he noted that there were 14 programs and 7 workshops and two international conferences that has been organized with this. In particular, he noted 2 studies, one about Kuwait and the knowledge economy, and another study which is ongoing, which is about the sovereign wealth funds. These are also part of this program. So that program really is tackling many of the issues that are critical for the Gulf and channeling the Gulf region. Dr. Adnan also noted that over the next couple of months, he, as the new Director General for CAFES, is planning to review and finalize a new strategic plan for CAFES, identify a framework and prioritize which areas he will be working on, in addition to working in parallel of doing some organizational environment, create an enabling organizational environment and some process to get the thing going. And he looks forward that CAFES will reach some successes under the guidance of His Highness the Emir of Kuwait. Let me say a few of the points, key points that Dr. Yusuf Ibrahim has highlighted in his opening remarks as well. He noted that from the beginning of the world was supposed to recover, world economy was supposed to recover in 2011. However, the new events in the first quarter of this year have changed this picture. The uprising in the Middle East, the tragic event and the earthquake and tsunami in Japan, all this and the debt crisis in Portugal, all this have changed the scene, and the projection that the people are making about world recovery will have to be reexamined. Dr. Yusuf highlighted the challenges that are meeting the Gulf countries, which we are all aware of. In particular, he noted that the financial crisis of 2008 has affected, of course, oil prices, reduced the revenue of Gulf countries, and have resulted in major decline of the sovereign wealth fund. He highlighted 4 essential areas to ensure the success of the GCC countries in the future, namely economic liberalization, effective regulation framework and good governance, inclusion of the majority of population to reap the benefits of development, and investments in education to produce the graduates for the labor market that the Gulf needs. Another point Dr. Yusuf made was really about economic integration in the GCC countries, and how GCC countries should continue and expedite the process of economic integration. Now, let me turn to some of the points that were raised and caught our attention yesterday. We talked about Asia and going east, but a few points I want to bring to your attention were the following. The issue of gas, that the nexus of energy and the issue of gas prices are low and subsidized in the GCC countries, and this have made FDI not attractive in this particular area. It's a good point that was discussed. The other one is the issue of subsidies. We talked a lot about the issue of subsidies yesterday, and we noted that you cannot continue to subsidize while there is a social contract between the citizens and the governments of the Gulf, and this is one way of distributing the wealth. But still, there should be a limit to this, and it was pointed out, and I fully agree with this point, that you really, if you want to manage the demand for electricity, you have to raise the price. I mean, you can do public awareness campaign and as much as you want, but you really have to raise the price to get this thing done. We talked about higher education yesterday and today, and I think this was very good sessions we have discussed. And then yesterday we talked about the good times and the bad times. Professor Danny talked to us about this and the Asia, the deficit in the United States, and he mentioned some interesting facts. If I got it correctly, he said that the trade deficit of the U.S., which was about 7% in 2008 and 2009, that's equivalent to the GDP of India. I do not know whether I got it correct or not, but this is something very striking that I would like to just emphasize. The other issue that we talked about when we talked about the financial crisis, this is systematic and non-systematic financial issues. Fawzi Sultan raised that, and we agreed that we should make that distinction. We talked about what should be the role of the G20, and in particular, what should be the role of Saudi Arabia, since they are a member of the G20. Another issue we discussed was Islamic financing. Is Islamic financing an alternative to the future financing? And the point was made that we should really, when we look at this, we should talk about risks and returns. Risks and returns was important issues that we have to look at. We talked about economic diversification, and Dr. Abbas gave us his empirical analysis in a very rich paper. And this is good. This morning, we talked about many, many good things. We started talking about knowledge economy, which I really think this is something for the future of the Gulf, and the Gulf countries have to address this. I was lucky to be part of the local expert team that worked with LSE and the Work Foundation on the Kuwait and the knowledge economy, and I think we did the first draft report, which was submitted to Sheikh Ahmed Al-Fahd, and I think it's something that we should pursue here in Kuwait, and other countries should move ahead with the knowledge economy. It's very important to do that. Another point that was made today is expenditures on research and development. It was noted that by world standards, the Gulf countries and the MENA region in particular, they spend very little on R&D and the STI, you know, and we should do something about that, because if you want to innovate, if you want to do join the knowledge economy, you have to commercialize the research. I mean, you can do research and keep it on the shelves. That doesn't do any good. You have to encourage FDI and use the offset program, bring the foreign investors in order to do some commercialization if you want to do a breakthrough in knowledge economy. Otherwise, you will not do it. We talked also about the link between FDI and food security and the link between FDI and knowledge economy. Sovereign Wealth Fund, we got a very nice lecture this morning also from Mark Thatcher. And we talked about the nuclear energy. Jawdat made a very good presentation about that. And, of course, we learned that the issues of Japan and the problems in Japan really gave us a wake-up call, and we have to really rethink maybe the safety issues before we embark on these things. Renewable was discussed. And I think that's about it. I would like to thank you, and these are the points that I took, and thank you very much for listening to me. Thank you.